have a seat and turn to Hosea again. Hosea, we're in chapter 4. If you're using the Bible, one of the Bibles from in back, that's on page 488. But it's possible that if you come here regularly, that your Bible opens to the beginning of Hosea. Just saying. We're going to read the entire chapter here and then dive in. Hear the word of the Lord, O children of Israel, for the Lord has a controversy with the inhabitants of the land. There is no faithfulness or steadfast love and no knowledge of God in the land. There is swearing, lying, murder, stealing, and committing adultery. They break all bounds, and bloodshed follows bloodshed. Therefore the land mourns, and all who dwell in it languish, and also the beasts of the field, and the birds of the heavens, and even the fish of the sea are taken away. Yet let no one contend, and let none accuse, for with you is my contention, O priest. You shall stumble by day. The prophet also shall stumble with you by night, and I will destroy your mother. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I reject you from being a priest to me. And since you have forgotten the law of your God, I also will forget your children. The more they increase, the more they sinned against me. I will change their glory into shame. They feed on the sin of my people. They are greedy for their iniquity. And it shall be like people, like priests. I will punish them for their ways and repay them for their deeds. They shall eat but not be satisfied. They shall play the whore but not multiply, because they have forsaken the Lord to cherish whoredom, wine, and new wine, which take away the understanding. My people inquire of a piece of wood, and their walking staff gives them oracles. For a spirit of whoredom has led them astray, and they have left their God to play the whore. They sacrifice on the tops of the mountains and burn offerings on the hills under oak, poplar, and terebinth, because their shade is good. Therefore your daughters play the whore, and your brides commit adultery. I will not punish your daughters when they play the whore, nor your brides when they commit adultery, for the men themselves go aside with prostitutes and sacrifice with cult prostitutes. A people without understanding shall come to ruin. Though you play the whore, O Israel, let not Judah become guilty. Enter not into Gilgal, nor go up to Beth-Aven, and swear not as the Lord lives. Like a stubborn heifer, Israel is stubborn. Can the Lord now feed them like a lamb in a broad pasture? Ephraim is joined to idols. Leave him alone. When their drink is gone, they give themselves to whoring. Their rulers dearly love shame. The wind has wrapped them in its wings, and they shall be ashamed because of their sacrifices. So Hosea is God's prophet in the 8th century B.C., is sent to Israel, the northern kingdom. Why? What is the condition of this nation? What's the problem, and what is his message? Well, there's several dimensions to this. In the first place, they have a worship problem. Who is number one in their lives? Who is their God? Well, it should be the true God, maker of heaven and earth, the redeemer of Israel. He brought them from Egypt all the way to the promised land. But their gods are idols, the Baals, and the golden calves that Jeroboam erected in Dan and Beersheba. They have a worship problem. But they also have a sin problem. The issue of morality. God's law. Right and wrong. So where are they at with respect to morality? Well, chapter 4, second half of verse 1 and verse 2. Here's where they're at. There is no faithfulness or steadfast love and no knowledge of God and land. There is swearing, lying, murder, stealing, and committing adultery. They break all bounds, and bloodshed follows bloodshed, not only a worship problem, but a sin problem. But that's not all. They have a relationship problem, relationship to God. This is pretty obvious. We've been walking through this. Hosea's marriage to promiscuous Gomer highlights this issue, because God told him to marry Gomer in order to demonstrate to Israel that God loves Israel in a way and to a degree that is in another category from human love. God's love demonstrates commitment and perseverance and putting up with offenses like you and I would never do. But Israel, God is calling Israel to return to the God who loves and the husband who is committed to them. So Israel, a worship problem, a sin problem, a relationship problem, but also, and here's where we're going tonight, a knowledge problem, a knowledge problem. And tonight we'll be thinking about knowing. Israel's lifestyle, Israel's choices, Israel's direction is nothing but foolish. It is self-destructive. Israel demonstrates they are unwise and irrational. In other words, it's not just that what they're doing is wrong. It's not just that what they're doing is against God and against someone who loves them, capital S, but it's just plain stupid and suicidal. A knowledge problem. Well, chapter 4, verse 1 begins with, "Hear the word of the Lord, O children of Israel." So now Hosea will preach with words. Now he's been preaching with his life. Remember, he and Gomer, the marriage, their lives, his pursuit of Gomer after she runs off. It's Hosea has been preaching a dramatic and tragic story with his life and his marriage, but now he preaches with words. Hear the word of the Lord. And this is what happens through the rest of this book. It begins by saying, "For the Lord has a controversy with the inhabitants of the land." The Lord has a controversy. This is, in the Hebrew, the terminology of a lawsuit. In other words, God is bringing a lawsuit against its departed wife, his departed wife, the nation of Israel. They have broken the covenant. They have broken the contract between the Lord and Israel. They have egregiously and on a sustained basis violated their part of the agreement. Exodus 20, at Mount Sinai, the Lord spoke all these words saying, "I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery." And then he gives them the conditions of the covenant, the Ten Commandments. "You shall have no other gods before me," and so on. So Israel, how you doing with the Ten Commandments? Back to chapter 4 and verse 2. "There is swearing in the land." Commandment number 3. "You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain." "There is lying." Commandment number 9. "You shall not bear false witness." "There is murder." Commandment number 6. "You shall not murder." "There is stealing." Commandment number 8. "You shall not steal." "There is committing adultery." Commandment number 7. "You shall not commit adultery." They break all bounds. I mean, no matter where you put the fence line, they go crashing through it. There are no limits to the sins they will commit and the offenses against God. They have broken the covenant with God. And bloodshed follows bloodshed. This is God's people in covenant with Him. We got a problem here. And so the Lord has a controversy with the nation of Israel because they have broken covenant with Him. Verse 3, "Therefore the land mourns, and everyone who dwells in it languishes." It's a tragic state of affairs. No one wins in this kind of turmoil and societal confusion. Well, the problem started with leadership. In verse 4b, the prophet is named. With you is my contention, O priest. And in verse 5, the prophet is named. You shall stumble by day. The prophet also shall stumble with you by night. And again, the priest is mentioned in verse 6 and 9. The rulers are mentioned in verse 18. And so leadership bears an extra measure of responsibility because A, they're the leaders. They have a special responsibility. And B, people just naturally follow them wherever they go. But what is the problem? Backing up. What is the problem? Well, it's multidimensional, but tonight we're going to focus on the knowledge problem. We're going to be thinking about knowing. And the knowledge problem is first mentioned in verse 1. There is no knowledge of God in the land. The fundamentals. No knowledge of God in the land. Well, here's where the problem starts. It is the fundamental issue. What do people need to know more than anything? We've already read it. Proverbs chapter 1 and verse 7. Jim read it for us. Let me go there. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And so knowing who God is, He is the Creator. He is the ruler of this world. His will is always done. And me? I'm just a man. I'm transient. I'm subject to God. I take my place before Him. And so I bow down before Him and I fear Him. The fear of the Lord, knowing who He is, knowing who I am. That's where wisdom starts. And it's more fully stated in Proverbs chapter 9 and verse 10. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is insight. That's a big statement. In other words, if you know God, you are well on your way in life. The knowledge of the Holy One, knowing God Himself, that is insight. So here is true wisdom, and here is where true wisdom begins, knowing God. It puts me in my place. I am not God. Humans get confused about this. I am not the purpose of my existence. I am not the center of the universe. There is a God, and He exists independently, outside of me. He's not just a construct of my thinking, a convenient philosophical angle to make me feel comfortable. God is, and I am, I exist in Him, but He does not exist in me. And so the world does not collapse when I'm not happy. Others do not exist to satisfy my needs. It puts me in my place. And then secondly, it puts God in His place. Because God is, there is purpose in life. Life is not random. It doesn't just happen, the result of a chain of events without any control, direction, or design. What happens to me is not by chance. Life makes sense. The different parts of time and space and history integrate and form a unifying theme because God is. And furthermore, God is the purpose. We live from Him and we live for Him. There is a right and wrong, and God defines it. God Himself is holy, and that has moral demands on me. I need to conform. As a creature, I must conform to a holy God and His definition of right and wrong that flows out of Himself. And God is love. We spent time on that 2 weeks ago. And this is very hopeful for me. For a loving God makes a way to rescue man from his great dilemma. And this changes everything. Knowing God. What happens when there is no knowledge of God? Well, it's clear. Chapter 4, verses 1 and 2. There is no knowledge of God in the land. And then what happens? There is swearing, lying, murder, and so on. There is an overflow of wickedness, all kinds of personal and societal evils. So, there may be libraries and databases and heads full of knowledge about everything else, but if we have no knowledge of God, we're in trouble. This is fundamental. It starts here. So what is this knowledge of God? I mean, after all, the Israelites were God's people. They had an intellectual acquaintance with monotheism. They knew about God. They had the five books of Moses. They had the sacrificial system. So what were they missing? What was God looking for when he said there is no knowledge of God in this land, in the land of Israel? Well, turn just a page or two forward to Hosea 6:3. Let us know. Let us press on to know the Lord. In other words, there's something more than what Israel had. They needed something more and something personal, a knowledge of God. Down to verse 6. For I desire steadfast love and not sacrifice, the knowledge of God rather than burnt offerings. What's God looking for? What does God want? What does God desire? Well, God is not just commanding. God is not just mandating, but here we have the expression of what God wants as he looks towards man. And what he wants is something that's personal rather than something that's public. I desire steadfast love and not sacrifices. It doesn't mean that he didn't want sacrifices. God instituted the sacrificial system. But put him in the balances. What does he want? I want this personal expression. I want you to know me. This is what I mean when I say know God. I want steadfast love, not just public sacrifices. I want the knowledge of God rather than burnt offerings. God's saying he wants reality rather than the empty form of religion. He wants the egg, not just the shell. He wants my heart, not just my hands. God is asking for something inward. That is what I am, rather than just outward, what I do. This is what I desire, steadfast love and not sacrifice, the knowledge of God rather than burnt offerings. So there is no knowledge of God in the land. This is what they were missing. They're worshiping Baal. They're worshiping the golden calves. They have these public displays of sin. They break all bounds. There is no knowledge of God in that land. So the knowledge of God is insight into, a belief in, and a commitment to God and his way for me. So the fundamentals of knowledge. But let's move on and consider the consequences. Chapter 4, verse 6. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, remember he's talking to the leadership, because you have rejected knowledge, I reject you from being a priest to me, and since you've forgotten the law of your God, I also will forget your children. These are the consequences of a lack of knowledge. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Well, the priests had a particular responsibility, and it was not just to offer sacrifices, but it was also to teach the people. That's obvious from this verse, but also back in Deuteronomy 31, 9 through 13, they were to read through the entirety of the law once every 7 years when the nation gathered together at the Feast of Booths so that the people could hear, learn, fear, and observe, they and their children, the law of God. The priests were to be teachers of the law. But it wasn't happening. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. The priests have dropped the ball. So what happens when there is no knowledge of God in the land? Well, the consequences of ignorance of God are destruction. This is a momentous matter. It's not simply a matter of personal preference. It's not like, you know, some prefer the iPhone, some prefer Androids. You know, some people wear colored socks, some wear white, some black, some no socks. Some eat only organic foods. Some believe in God, some don't. No, this is no optional matter. This is no mere matter of taste. When there is no knowledge of God in the land, destruction is on its way. And note also that this ignorance is not just a naivety, a guiltless ignorance. Verse 6, because you have rejected knowledge. They had rejected knowledge. Remember, the Israelites had the commandments, the five books of Moses. They had the worship of God. They had the prophets and the priests. They had all of these sources of knowledge, but they blew it away. They rejected knowledge. In our society today, we have evidence for God. We have a voice within conscience saying this is right or this is wrong. We have creation, the world around us. It tells a story. You see the beauty of all that God has made and humans' ability, who are made in the image of God, to create beauty as well. And there is great power in this universe. Weather and storms and earthquakes and power of all sorts. And there is the intricacy of design, whether at a molecular level or out in the universe, how natural laws interact with each other. And there is the presence of love. Humans love. And there is joy. And there are relationships. Who is behind all of this? Someone bigger than what has been made. This is the evidence for God. This knowledge. And the question is, what will you do with this knowledge? Will you believe it? Or will you push it away and reject this knowledge of God that is talking to you, giving evidence to you day and night? And this is the very thing that Paul speaks of in Romans chapter 1, verses 19 through 21. It's on page 610, if you have a mind to turn there. Romans 1, 19. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them, for his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, that is, there is a God bigger than we are, because he made us and he made this world. His invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made, so they are without excuse. God has shown it to them. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking and their foolish hearts were darkened. Well, God has made it clear who he is, that there is a God. And so, there is evidence for God. And there is a rejection of that evidence when people resort to other ways of constructing their universe. So knowing there is a God makes me responsible. I mean, knowing that there is a God makes me responsible for finding out more about him. If he is God, and he is what we perceive him to be, greater than the beginner, the sustainer of the universe, that I need to find out about him. Who is he? And what is he like? And what does he expect of me? And how does he want me to live? And so wisdom is living in light of God. as God would have me live. Proverbs chapter 1, what we just read. Wisdom is living in obedience to His good work, and rejecting God's wisdom, God's will, and God's way is not in my own best interest. That is destructive. The prophet Isaiah said to the southern kingdom, "Therefore my people go into exile for lack of knowledge." They knew so much, but they didn't know what matters. A costly ignorance of God, an ignorance with great consequences. So in the third place, in verse 11, we come to the catalyst. The catalyst. Look at verses 10 and 11 with me. They shall eat, so these are the priests, the leaders. They shall eat, but not be satisfied. They shall play the whore, but not multiply. Because they have forsaken the Lord to cherish whoredom, wine, and new wine, which take away the understanding. We're talking about the catalyst. A catalyst is something that initiates or accelerates a chemical reaction. And so whoredom, wine, and new wine accelerate the taking away of understanding. Back up to the beginning of verse 10, they shall eat, but not be satisfied. We're talking about the hamster wheel of sin. You run so fast, but you get nowhere. Sin makes me hungry for more. My desires are, my appetites are heightened, are increased, and I want more. And you consume sin, and you follow your desires, and more, and faster, but it's a hamster wheel. You get nowhere. There is no true accomplishment. There is no satisfaction. You wake up empty in the morning. No more satisfied, but more hungry. They shall eat and not be satisfied. And why is this? Well, it's right here. Because they have forsaken the Lord to cherish whoredom, wine, and new wine, which take away the understanding. They've left their God, they've forsaken the Lord, to cherish whoredom, wine, and new wine. You look at what they left God, and then what they've left it for. Well, what's so much better than God? What's so much more rewarding and fulfilling and exciting and pleasing? Sex, alcohol, and spiritual adultery, that is, idolatry. Looking at those three categories for a moment. Whoredom, sexual pleasure outside the covenant of marriage. Hosea names it as something that takes away understanding. In other words, adultery, sexual addiction, pornography. And that's what happened to Gomer. She was a slave of her pleasures and did the most self-destructive, foolish things. And this is the scourge of 21st century Western civilization. Sex becomes the major source of pleasure in life. The only source of happiness and satisfaction. For some, it becomes the only relief to boredom and fear and sadness. And yet you end up with nowhere else to turn than sex or porn, and sex becomes your God. Secondly, there's alcohol or substance abuse or misuse, and it's parallel. And what is a legitimate source for joy for the heart of man, according to the Bible, takes a dominant place in his life, and it becomes a refuge to which you resort whenever life threatens you. And so, whoredom, wine, and new wine. And then in the third place, idolatry is in the same category. Idolatry, spiritual adultery, is the focus of the book of Hosea. Loving and making something else the focus of my life instead of God. And that's what God was talking to Israel about through Hosea, marrying and loving Gomer, the adulterous wife. He's saying to the nation of Israel, your love affair with idols is leaving me, your God, for another lover. And so the question about idolatry is what do we worship? What controls my heart? What is my North Star giving direction to all the rest of my life? It could be money, could be your GPA, could be the publications you have, it could be athletic achievement, could be a relationship, it could be vocational success. Any of these things can become an idol and take the place of God in your life. Well, so what's he saying? He's saying, they have forsaken the Lord to cherish whoredom, wine, and new wine, which take away the understanding. All of these practices begin as a choice. Well, I'll try this. But they end up running your life. They end up controlling you. And you become a slave to your desires, to your fixation. And they take away the understanding, the ability to make reasonable decisions. You lose context. You lose life context. You lose the bigger picture in your thinking because you are so fixated on this one thing that you must have. It's the only thing you can think about. It's the only thing visible through your windshield. It's the one thing that your thoughts keep returning to. It's what drives you in life, and then you make stupid decisions. And you begin hurting yourself and hurting the ones you love and hurting your future and diverting your attention from other things that matter in life and depleting your energies and resources. It's a knowledge problem. Your understanding has been taken away. 2 Timothy 3 talks about those who are led astray by various passions. And if your pursuit is secret, like with porn or alcohol, for example, you may come to believe that no one will find out, and you become reckless, and you become comfortable taking outsized risks. Your understanding is being taken away. And so sexual addicts and alcohol and substance addicts create their own fantasy world, and they inhabit it all by themselves in their make-believe world. And they define what is important. It's their God. And it is the satisfaction of their big desire. And how good it is, no matter that they feel empty and guilty the next morning. And they take these risks that they deem acceptable to get what they want. And they sacrifice so much of the rest of their life in the pursuit of pleasure. And they tell themselves they can easily leave this lifestyle at any time they want. And they end up lying to themselves so frequently and so extensively that they begin to believe themselves and no longer can distinguish truth from the lie. It takes away the understanding. And once the understanding is gone, once you're enslaved to your passions, a return to rationality, to wisdom, is rare indeed. Proverbs 5:11 speaks of the young man who pursues the forbidden woman. At the end of your life, you groan when your flesh and body are consumed, and you say, "How I hated discipline, and my heart despised reproof. I did not listen to the voice of my teachers or incline my ear to my instructors." Proverbs 2:19, speaking of the forbidden woman, "None who go to her come back, nor do they regain the paths of life." 2 Peter 2:14, speaking of false teachers, again, those who lead others. They have eyes full of adultery, insatiable for sin, New American Standard, that never cease from sin. They can't stop going back, enslavement. Proverbs 23:27, "For the prostitute is a deep pit, and an adulteress is a narrow well." It's not so easy to get out once you've fallen in. In Hosea 5:4, "Their deeds do not permit them to return to their God, for the spirit of whoredom is within them, and they do not know the Lord." They have become enslaved by their habitual practices, and their heart is overtaken by the spirit of whoredom, and it's taken away the understanding. They no longer know the Lord. They have forsaken the Lord to cherish whoredom, wine, and new wine, which take away the understanding. This descent into foolishness and ignorance, this taking away of understanding, is accelerated by whoredom, wine, and idolatry. And then in the last place we have the outcome. Verse 14. I will not punish your daughters when they play the whore, nor your brides when they commit adultery, for the men themselves go aside with prostitutes and sacrifice with cult prostitutes, and a people without understanding shall come to ruin. So where does it all end up? Well, for Israel, they were on a collision course with the judgment of God, the coming of the Assyrian armies to destroy their nation. It didn't have to be this way. God was pleading with them to turn from their idolatry and from their sins and to return to Him. God was warning them of the consequences of continuing in this lifestyle, but they couldn't see it. They were blinded by their sins. They had lost understanding. And so what about us today here in Ann Arbor in 2017? Where are you with God? He's given you evidence that He's there. He's given you your conscience, the world around you, His work in your life. Do you know Him? Do you know God? Would you begin seeking Him? Or are you trapped in a course of life in which some idol, sex, alcohol, a substance, is taking away your understanding? Jesus says that he who commits sin is the slave of sin. Sin is enslaving. But Jesus also says in the very same chapter that if the Son, that is Jesus himself, sets you free, you will be free indeed. Those who are enslaved by sin can be set free by Jesus, who gave himself to rescue lost men and women, sinners, to bring forgiveness. You will be free indeed if the Son sets you free. Jesus came to bring light into darkness, to give knowledge for ignorance, to give freedom for captivity, to give forgiveness for guilt, to give sight for blindness. Here is wisdom. Here is wisdom for life and for eternity. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is insight, that I may know Him, Jesus, and the power of His resurrection, and may share His suffering. Let's pray.